Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 178. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brett Yanosky.
And I'm Austin Morales. And this week on The Inner Gamer, I played Poday. Brett played something that you get to find out if you listen to this podcast. And in the news, Guild Wars 2 writer fired after a heated exchange with streamers. And then PT is getting a playable remake for free. And on the discussion topic, we have a video game writer called Danny Gallagher, and he's going to be here with our discussion, talking about writing for video games. That should be interesting. All here, right now, on The Inner Gamer. Cue the music.
Welcome to The Inner Gamer.
It is July 10th, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we'd love for you to support us on Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you can contribute and help us grow the podcast to be able to, you know, get better production quality, pay for more advertising to reach larger audiences, to make this podcast and all the content that we produce even better. And yeah, all you have to do is go to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. So, Austin, let's talk about some video games. You played a game called Poday.
Poday. Or Pod. Or Pod. Silent E. I don't know.
Pood.
No, it's Poday. Apparently, that is Norwegian translation. This is a Norwegian game.
What does it mean?
It means graft.
Graft?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Okay, so there was three definitions that I found on Google, and the one that closest resembles this game, I feel like, is the noun graft, or even the verb graft, which is hard work or work hard.
Okay.
That's a close thing. Fine.
So tell me about how this game makes you work hard.
It's a co-op game. You can play it solo if you want to.
We should play it.
Oh, no. It's really fun, actually. And you have to... A star and a rock are the two characters. Each have different abilities.
Did you say a star and a rock?
A star and a rock, yes.
Like, okay.
Yeah. So each have different abilities. You go into this mountain that you have to ascend to get to the top, which I assume that's when the star can take off and, you know, this relationship between these two ends.
So the rock forms into a mountain and then the star jumps off the mountain into the sky to become the sky and the mountain, the land and the sky. And then it forms one union of earth and sky.
No.
No, I'm telling you, that's it.
Okay. Yeah. If that is how it is,
I just
holy
pray to
shit.
The future.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, deep.
Well,
deep.
Both these characters have different abilities. So you go into these levels, which are environmental puzzles.
Yeah.
And the star is able to make vegetation grow. So you come up into this area, right? And it's just like a cave. But obviously you see like areas where there's dirt and you see other areas where there's like rocks. And so as you walk around and using your ability, luscious vegetation grows from the star, and then the rock actually grows like stalactites and stuff like that. Is it stalactites that go up?
I don't know.
Probably. Stalagmites, one of those things.
I never remember that.
Okay. Well, he starts growing rock formations. So by the time you finish this level, like if you go to these areas, which clearly you could know which is able to like grow things, like
yeah.
It becomes this beautiful portrait, like stunning portraits of like just it goes from barren to completely.
And this is in each level
you okay. can do this in each level.
That's cool.
And it's not necessary, like, well, some of it is obviously because it's environmental puzzles, so you have to unlock certain things, and obviously there's you have to work together in certain ways.
Do you get like a bonus trinket though if you like fill out the entire world?
No.
That's dumb.
I was thinking you might get points or something might happen at the end, but it doesn't.
Weird.
At least not. I mean, I'm not a completionist, but this stuff is actually really cool. Like, I want to see what it looks like once you like unlock or grow everything.
Is there a photo mode?
No. I mean, you just use the Switch. I'm playing this on a Switch, by the way.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I just use the Switch thing. I take a picture of it.
Oh, man. But that has a UI on it.
No. Do you want a photo
there's
mode?
There's a UI?
No. What do you mean?
There's no photo? UI? Is there an interface?
Oh, no.
Like on the screen?
No.
So when you take a screenshot, there's no like pause button or there's not like it's literally just like the game world. There's no like health bar. There's no
you don't lose any health.
Anything really?
Nope, nothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So everything is in the game, which is really cool, and it makes for a very serene and charming experience. That I mean, this is for the casual gamer. Like,
so
you
it's
come
just
home
a
after
game.
Yeah. You come home after a long day. You put this on. The music's great, calming. The worlds are beautiful. There's multiple levels as you ascend this mountain, and the puzzles are actually pretty challenging.
Yeah,
I was surprised. I thought I would get this, and you know, early on, obviously they're pretty easy. But as you start going up the mountain, they get more difficult. And I was just like I sat for one for 5 minutes, and I was like, I don't understand. Now the bosses are like the big puzzle. So you get all these small puzzles leading up, which are pretty simple, right? Like, one guy has to click something over here that opens up something over there, and the other guy goes in there and does a thing, and then, you know, it's like back and forth of helping each other out and growing, and you get different abilities along the way.
So what happens when you're playing single player? How does that co-op change?
There's actually a button where it allows you guys to walk together.
Oh, okay.
So instead of doing, because you can switch between the two characters to do them separately,
yeah.
Or you can hold a button down that allows you to come together and
gotcha.
Work together. But I was watching some stuff online, and seeing people actually play together makes for some good commentary along the way, and like trying to figure out certain puzzles. There's one puzzle I did not know what I was doing. I had an idea, but I could not figure it. And I got really frustrated. I put the controller down. I was like, you know what? Fuck this game.
It could be a good next video.
No, yeah, for sure.
We should
yeah.
record it and do that.
I will.
Is it? No, I mean, we should.
Oh, we, yeah, yeah.
Because it's co-op.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Let's record the co-op
down.
Experience.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
We'll do it right now. Not yeah. really. But.
Yeah. We're going to pause and come back and read through it. I'm just
yeah,
kidding.
3 hours.
Yeah. Cool. So it was, is it exclusive to the Switch or is it on other platforms?
It's currently just on Nintendo Switch.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah, it's just really charming. Like, I mean, it's great for the Switch. I'm sure they'll bring it to other consoles eventually, but right now exclusively on the Switch.
Ditch or delay?
Oh, totally dig it. Totally dig it.
Yeah.
Because the artwork looks great. I mean, we need more co-op stuff, and this is very, like, as simple as it is, it actually, there is a lot of complication. It could get complicated, and it's nice to see that. It should be played with a friend, for sure. I've been playing it by myself, because obviously I don't have any friends.
I didn't know he was playing it till today.
Yeah.
That's what he tells his friends. He doesn't play with them.
So it was made in Norway. The developer is called Henchman and Goon.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it goes for $24.99, which is it's a little steep. But I think once you, if you buy it and you get into it, you'll see it's well worth the money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a good holdover right now until we get other Switch games to come out.
There's a lot of them coming out.
Oh,
I added four to my wish list today. It was awful.
Hey, man. I haven't even looked on there recently.
Oh, no. It's so bad.
It's so bad.
So bad. I didn't buy any today, but I was tempted to. I was like, man, this game looks really cool. And this game looks really cool. And this game looks really cool. So
all of them.
Anyway.
Here, I'll show you real quick. I know everyone at home can't see, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I saw the screenshots for it earlier. Cool. Yeah. Because it's on my wish list, actually. Before
oh,
you
nice.
Told me about it, I put on my wish list.
Nice.
I like the art style.
Right.
So,
by the way, I was given a code to play this game. It did not affect my opinion at all. I feel like we have to say that. I shouldn't have to say that. We try to give our honest reviews here, but there you go. Take it for what it is.
Cool. So I played West of Loathing finally. Got into that game. This game came out in August of 2017 originally, but now it's on the Switch. So on PC, it's got a 10 out of a 10 review-wise, really high review, and it is a stick figure game made by...
Sorry, 10 out of 10 on the Switch?
No, on Steam.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which is even better, because
yeah,
you
I
can't
know.
Give a 10 out of 10 on Switch. But 10 out of 10 on Steam, 85% Metacritic, 9 out of 10 on Polygon. This game was made by Asymmetric Publications, and it's a black and white Western RPG, and they're stick figures. So you pick a character at the beginning, you create your character. They're all stick figures, so they look exactly the same, except they have a different hat. So I picked one that's kind of more in tune to a magician of the sorts. He's got a wizard's hat and whatnot. And you enter into the world. You're in like a town, and you have to first you leave home, and you're like, I'm going to venture out west to explore what's out there. So you leave your family, you venture out west. And in the first town you come to is called like something water, creek water or something like that. And in that town you meet, there's a jail, there is a merchant, there's a bar, the traditional things you'd see in a Western town. And you go in there and you interact with these different characters. Everything's text-based. There's no dialogue or anything like that. It's all text-based, but it has audio and music. So you go to these characters and they have little dialogue trees of conversations that are going on. And as you're doing that, the dialogue is hilarious. Like, I think that's one of the things that people like so much about this is that slapstick humor and, everything that they say, like little quirks, some of it's like really dumb dialogue, but it's funny, dumb dialogue. And then there's other bits where it's just like, this is who thought of this writing? This is zany and weird. Like there's literally a mission that you get that tasks you to go down into this like snake pit thing, in this cave, and you're walking through and there's a plaque up on the wall, and like every few feet there's a plaque, and you go and read this plaque, and it's a story about these adventurers who were on this journey, and they went here and they went there and they met this mystical thing here and they heard of this mysterious treasure there. And you're walking through and like you're thinking you're gonna get to the like the end of the tunnel and you're gonna have to fight these like ghost demons or whatever, and you're reading all these plaques, and then the last plaque says, and then we found the tunnel that we're looking for. We went into the cave. We explored down the cave. We found the buried treasure and we got wealthy and tons of riches and amazing stuff. And then you go to look behind you and then here is that hole where they dug up the treasure. And then you're like, fuck, I just wasted like 15 minutes walking through this stupid cave, reading all these plaques about the story of like hidden treasure. And I get to the end and what's there? An empty hole. But they left a story there for adventurers to know about their excitement that they had leading up to that point. So those kinds of things are just like stupid, silly stuff. But it's really, really entertaining.
How big is this game? Do you know?
I mean, I played 7 hours already.
Yeah.
And I've only covered like 1/4 of the map. So it's pretty intense, I think.
Wow.
Or one, a little, I haven't crossed over. There's like, because once you play that beginning tutorial part, then it opens up in this larger map. And basically all it is like a map that says you need to draw shit in to like discover stuff. So as you're exploring through, like you get a hint from somebody, like you go to the jail cell and they'll say there's so-and-so gang is wanted for whatever. So that'll populate on the map. And then as you're traveling to that location, you may just, a text box will pop up and say, hey, there's this thing that you just discovered. Do you want to go here now or do you want to keep going? So you can say like, oh, keep going. And then you'll see these little like illustrations of each location just like sprout up on the map. So it's kind of like little map markers on there. And you can like wander and then try and discover more things along the way, but you don't have to. And, but like you're collecting, it's all about the main concepts of it are just, you're learning that you're trying to go out west, you're doing quests and missions for folks, you're collecting inventory stuff and managing your inventory. And I don't like how they manage the inventory management is, but I'm a hater for that. But the way that they have it like sorted is really kind of confusing, but it's not terrible. But like you can get different things from, like you pick up a dead wizard's hat and you equip that and it adds plus two
dead
to your moxie.
Wizard's hat.
Yeah.
That's the name of it?
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a dead wizard's hat. And then there's there's these spit buckets that you can dig into. And it's got this whole little mini story when you like dig into the spit bucket. It's like you look down the spit bucket and it looks disgusting and it's so atrocious. And it's like, I don't know why the heck you wouldn't want to even put your hand in there. And you have the option to say, keep going or stop. And then it says, okay. So you keep going, you stick your hand in there. It's just gooey and gross and slimy. And just, it feels like dead mucus rotting inside, blah, blah, blah. And you just keep pushing and pushing until you discover something. And then once you discover, it's like a old ring that's like dilapidated and falling apart, but it's like a thing you can wear and it gives you plus something. So like you can actually discover goods in there, but the storytelling like leading up to like finding that item.
Is there no visuals
really
when you're doing this or just all?
It's just text. Okay. And then when at the end, you used to have a little illustration of what that thing looks like.
I got you.
That's about it. But yeah, it's all a text adventure game. And when you're doing combat, it's very simple combat. It's a turn-based combat. There's no grids or anything like that. It's just you start out, you can have a partner when you go out into the world. So you can pick what partner you have to fight with you. The girl I have has like a shotgun that she shoots and she can put a shield up in front of me. Oh, so nice. That's really helpful. And then you fight, like, say you have five skeletons you're trying to fight, because there's all this like mysterious kind of witchcrafty stuff in there, like possessed skeletons and possessed demon things and stuff like that. So there's kind of some fantasy stuff mixed in with the Western concepts, but it's the combat's very simple. You just have your list of skills, and because I'm a magician, I also have some bean powers, because I'm a bean wizard of some kind that uses beans as my mystical magic. So I can send out like a bean lava thing, or like a bean sprout lava or something like that, and it fires lava at them and does heat damage. Or I'll pick up items along the way, like incendiary bullets that also do fire damage when I shoot at somebody. Or I have a rope, a lasso, that will lasso them and keep them out for a turn so they can't fight. And you kind of, there's some strategy involved when you're fighting and combating these guys, but I've never really had a challenge that's been hard to overcome. It's just been just interesting and different. Like, they're always throwing something new at you. Like, I had one earlier where I was fighting these skeletons that were all broken up into pieces, and then there was six of them I had to kill. They all have the same amount of HP, and I can only do like 20 damage per skeleton. So literally Siri just listened to that entire conversation. So there's all these skeletons that I'm fighting, and one, like two of them in the back are shooting damage at me, and then two in the middle are healing their skeleton things, and the one in the front's like shooting just like basic damage. So the ones in the back, if you're shooting a gun, you're going to hit the ones in the front because of the, you know, the fact that there's something in front of them. So I can't take out the ones in the back unless I use my melee attack. So if I use my melee, I can like go around all of them, hit that guy, and walk back in place. But then I had to kill the guys in front of them while knowing that the middle guys are going to heal everybody around them. So I have to strategically figure out like which one I'm going to take out first so I don't die. So there's a little bit of strategy involved to it. But ultimately, it's just, it's really funny and silly. And
yeah.
Just like the stick figures are hilarious. And there's all kinds of things to explore. And just like you go off a beaten path a little bit and you find a room that's got some kind of like necromancer manual that you now have a necromancer's book I can write like spells and shit into. And, you know, weird, just weird things. But there's a lot into this game, way more than I thought. I think it was like $15, something like that. But totally worth it. It's been really, really fun. So it's a dig. It's a dig, as I say.
I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
If you want to, you can watch our interview with one of the devs at theinnergamer.com.net. Sorry.
Or you can go to youtube.com/theinnergamer.
Yes.
You can find it there.
Actually, I don't even know if it's up on .net. Is it?
Yeah, it's on there.
Oh, okay, cool.
Well, I mean, So what I have on there is I have the playlist
right. Of
each conversation, and then you can click to watch latest video, and then there's a link that says watch the rest of the series, and when you go to see the series,
gotcha. You
can see all the videos in that series.
Gotcha.
So I got the Inner Gamer Invades, I got Next, I have the Inner Gamer On, all that stuff is all there, so
heck
you can
yeah.
see it that way. Yeah, but all those locations will lead you in the right direction, down the ghostly path to the Skellyman. Yeah.
Cool. Lame. No, so, I'm just kidding.
West of Loathing. There you have it. I'm enjoying it, and I'm going to keep playing it. I'm going to beat it.
Nice, man.
Y'all should check it out. And
okay, some kind of lesser known games this week, but I always like diving into these. So they're so cool. Little gems along the way.
Yeah.
Aside from all the AAA open world FPSs.
West of Loathing has become like a cult classic. Like, it's built a huge following of people that really like it. Like, Kingdom of Loathing got a big backing behind it, but like this West of Loathing game, I mean, I think it's, let's see how many people reviewed it on Steam. So I think it's got a lot. It's got over almost 2,400 reviews on Steam. So like a lot of people have been talking about it and stuff, which is pretty awesome. So it's great. Good stuff. Anyway, so that's going to wrap it up for the games we played this week. Stay tuned for our video game news. We're going to be right back and chat about some really weird stuff that happened. It's kind of an interesting set of stuff this week, but it should be fun. So stay tuned.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for our video game news. In this segment, we share the best headlines. The best from the week in the gaming industry.
The
first story we have is kind of an interesting one, and it's developed over the last week or so, but it started with a Guild Wars 2 writer Her name is Jessica Price. She wrote a lengthy Twitter thread around her thought on writing characters in MMOs, basically, and particularly Guild Wars, in that it's really hard to write a character that is uniquely different, in that because as a player, you can choose anything you want to be. And by giving them kind of a pathway or a direction as a writer, then you kind of make them kind of pull them away from being able to know, like, assume, like, they think now you're playing the game, the play, the developer's character rather than their own character. So like with story game, where you're like, you know, you're playing Corvo, that, you know, hey, this is Corvo you're playing, you know, that's what you're playing and that's just how it's going to be. But in this kind of game, you want them to feel like they're playing their own character. So it's hard to write for that. So yes, this Twitch streamer replied, in my mind, very, with no, I mean, this was, I think, a very perfectly fine reply. And he said, really interesting thread to read. However, I want to disagree slightly. I don't believe the issue lies in the MMORPG genre itself, which is what she was implying. He believes the issue lies in the constraints of the living story's narrative design. And he goes on to say about how, like, branching narrative can help basically allow you to have some leeway in what your character is saying and doing while still having story driven kind of pathways throughout the game, like having very strong story pathways and having a very defined character. But by the fact, by you being able to pick what options you say, gives you a little bit more freedom in being able to choose the pathway of your character. Right. So she responds on Twitter, today I'm being a female game dev. Quote, allow me, a person who does not work with you, explain to you how you do your job. So she took it as like he was kind of basically calling her out in a way, I guess, or like saying, like telling her how to do her job. But I don't take it in the context that he was doing that, but that's how she perceived it. So there was like a back and forth here, and he responded like and apologized, was like, I mean, kind of offended in a way, which I don't blame him, but at the same time, like, I didn't mean anything disrespectful, blah blah blah. And then it ultimately led to her and her friend that she also works with, Peter Fries, to be fired from ArenaNet for their comments with the community and that. So yeah. And then so she replied later on and a stance, or her stance on the email was like, quote, by the time that guy came along, I was so tired of having random people explain my job to me in company spaces where I had to just smile and nod that it was like, no, not here, not in my space. And then she also discussed that the effect it may have on other employees, like saying the message is clear, especially to women at the company. If Reddit wants you fired, we'll fire you. She said, get out there and make sure the players have a good time and make sure you smile while they hit on you. So it's kind of like a...
Says why they hit you.
It's, yeah.
Not
it's,
on you.
Yeah, it's weird in that, like, she's taking offense to it, I think, for, like, because she's a woman and she thinks that it's kind of like going against her with that. And obviously, like, we don't have the right stances from this perspective, but I think that
she's like almost making an argument and correlation to like cheerleaders. Like, I know this is a big deal. Like, there was a story recently that I saw where cheerleaders were speaking out and how like the managers and stuff of certain cheerleading teams for football were like, yeah, go out there, mingle with the fans. And if they touch you or anything, you know, that's just part of the job. That's different from this. Like, this is completely different.
Right, right.
You know? I don't know. Do you see that correlation here? Like, it kind of seems like that.
Yeah, it's like, kind of seem like that's what... But and I understand
you're on
that...
You're on the internet. People are going to shit on you all the time, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. That's just part of the job.
Yeah, and I think you're going to get
right,
that.
It's not right, but still.
I
mean,
I think it's right for her to, you know, speak out about her perception on this, but... In this context of what he was saying, he was not one of those people.
Right.
Like, his exactly. response, like, does not trigger to me that he was being disrespectful in any way to her by the fact that she's a woman or the fact that she's, you know, not... I mean, I understand that, like, I have people tell me all the time, like, oh, yeah, it's so easy to, like, design a logo or do this thing. Like, oh, you can just whip it up in Photoshop or whatever. I'm like, no, that's not the case. There's a lot more to it. But at the same time, you have to realize that these people... lack the knowledge that you have about a thing that you're doing.
Right.
So you have to put yourself in their shoes for a minute and see the perspective that they're coming from. But this perspective here, I think he has a good point. Mm-hmm. Granted, I don't make games either, but like there is some value in this, and there's also value in listening to other people. Cause although maybe on the surface level, they have an incorrect stance, the other standpoint of this is that they're playing your game. So their feedback is important, as long as it's like, not like, oh, this sucks and this is dumb for no reason or whatever.
Right.
At least he kind of explained himself, or he did explain himself in that.
Yeah, constructive criticism.
Here's what I think is good about this, but I disagree with you in a way because I think this would be a good thing. So he just wanted to create a dialogue there, and then she took it as basically an attack in a way, and that's kind of where things went. So right. I don't think he was at fault. I don't disagree with her for reacting the way she did, but I think she could have been a little bit more, could have toned that back a little bit.
I totally disagree with her.
Yeah.
It's a fan.
Yeah.
Like, you don't treat fans like that. And this has been an issue that I've seen actually recently, when there's a few directors for certain movies coming out and attacking fans as well, being like, well, I just don't agree with you. You're a shitty fan. Obviously, I'm just like kind of paraphrasing. They didn't say this exactly. And if you don't like my product, just go somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But like, as someone who's trying to sell something, you know, a lot of different people are going to look at your stuff.
Well, not to get political or anything, but like when Donald Trump was elected, there was a lot of celebrities that basically said, well, if you voted for Donald Trump, then you're not a fan of mine. Then you can't be a fan of mine, or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I feel like you should cut that kind of aspect out, because these are the people that are helping pay your bills.
Yeah.
Like, whatever they believe, like, everybody has differences. Like, that's going to be a thing that exists. But by saying that, you're not, again, not putting yourself in those people's shoes.
Right.
And seeing, like, you know, where they come from. They may have very good logical reasons for thinking that way.
Right.
Whereas your viewpoint's just different. And that's just how things are going to be. So I think in this respect, she should have been a little bit more open-minded in that maybe he's not. But I mean, I understand that in the position that she's in, as a female writer in the games industry, there's still a long ways that we need to go in order to give more kind of, open, I guess. I don't think it's necessarily like an equality thing, but it's more like, I think there is still like this toxicity in the gaming world with gamers, and that they kind of, you know, don't think that women should be playing games or being involved in games or whatever. There's some of those, just for lack of a better word, assholes out there that feel that way. And this is why they have this kind of defensive barrier that like makes them kind of react in the way that they do, because of history and stuff like that. You know, it's the same with like people with like religious, like, you know, certain religious beliefs. Like, they're still defensive about certain things when people react to them, or like racial, you know, things that like when people talk about, you know, like, you know, any kind of race of any kind, like there's this barrier that's up because of history and what has happened in the past in regards to like a race, a religion, or a sex.
Right.
So,
and this is why texting's bad and chat on internet's bad, because there's no context. There's no, you can't, obviously, if his tone, if he had a certain tone, then you're like, okay, you're getting at something here, but you can't see that. You can only put, you know, I don't know the right, like, you put your own tone that you feel is happening there, and that gets a lot of people in trouble all the time, and people overreact because of that, and then obviously fights start out, and now you're just bickering over the internet.
Yeah.
There's no context, there's no tone to define anything. And I don't know. I always take people as like they're treating me nicely. Obviously, they start cussing and stuff. We have people in our comments who's like, that guy on the mic sucks, he doesn't know what he's doing. That is criticism, but it's not constructive criticism. So you just throw that out the door, you know?
Right.
You know, hopefully you can start dialogue with people. I mean, people have to know you're not going to always agree on stuff. And people who don't know how to do your job can tell you how to do your job. But in a place like video game, this is why it's so great, is that we can speak with each other and almost instantly have things change for the better.
Yeah.
And that's like the best part about gaming. You can't find that in any other industry. And these conversations should happen. And I mean, I don't know her life. Maybe she has people rag on her all the time. I don't know her circumstances, yeah.
But it's, I mean, it's
when you're speaking for the company,
when you're in the limelight of any kind, or if you put yourself in the limelight, because in this case, she put herself out there by putting this, like putting this message out there.
Right.
And that's great. And I think more people should do that and put their opinions out there online to share with the world to see, you know, just let them know, like, hey, this is my belief on this stance. This is kind of like where I stand from this viewpoint. You know, be transparent. But at the same time, if you're going to be transparent, you also have to have thick skin. And you have to be able to take the punches, because there's going to be trolls out there. There's going to be assholes. That's just exists. Like, there's you can't have good without bad. You can't have, you know, nice without mean. Like, you know, there's got to be a, you know, two sides to everything. And in this case, because otherwise you wouldn't know what's good and bad. Like, you know, you wouldn't know what bad is if everybody was good. Right. So like that has to exist for that balance, that, you know, for that balance or whatever. But I don't know. I think that it's a bummer. Like, I don't think she should have got fired. Like, I think that was the wrong stance from the company's perspective. I think they should have like spoke to her like, hey, like, I agree. Like, I think it's good that you put this out there, but think about the tone. Like, you have to have, in this industry, if you're putting yourself out there, you need to have a tone with people that isn't kind of like pushing at them, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
And that's kind of what she did. Was she was like, she felt attacked, and she wasn't, I don't think. And that's kind of, but it sucks that she got fired, because she shouldn't have been fired, because I'm sure she's incredibly talented and very valuable to that team and probably contributed a lot to it.
Maybe this isn't her first time to do something like this.
I don't know.
I mean, we don't know anything else besides this, but yeah.
But it's interesting. So I'm curious to know what other people think about it. So like, if you have any commentary or additional thoughts about this, shoot us an email at hello@theinnergamer.net and let us know your opinions on it. But let's jump to the next story. So this is interesting.
I'm watching this right now.
Last week, yes. Jump forward to the 350 part.
Oh, okay, 350.
It's definitely important to go there. So there's Fortnite had their rocket launch last week, and there were some people that got together in this game to have a viewing party. So everybody kind of, I don't know how they did this, but they collectively decided, we're going to build a huge, huge stairwell to the sky to watch the rocket launch as high as they possibly could. And it's really cool kind of community event where everybody is up there. They were like building this tower of like, you know, stairwells up to the top, and people were having these emoticons or the animations where they're like eating popcorn, like waiting for the rocket launch. And somebody had a rocket launch kind of emoji thing that they were like jumping on, like bouncing around. Those aren't emojis. What are those called?
Emotes.
And, so everybody's up there. They watched a rocket launch, and then this guy who goes by the name of Elemental Ray kind of couldn't help himself and started destroying all the stairwells below everybody and making them all fall to their death.
He couldn't help himself.
48 kills in one go.
Wow.
So he scored a single round record for a solo player in Fortnite. And so everybody got to see the rocket launch, but then he also killed 48 players in the process. So it's kind of a dick move on his part, but it's kind of funny at the same time. It's like, what the hell?
That's man.
It's an example of trolls in the game.
There it is. You can't get past the trolls. Oh no, there they go. This is awesome.
Isn't that crazy? Because you start seeing on the side like all the deaths like racking up, and then all of a sudden the guy up there goes down, like everybody just starts falling to the ground and just dies. Like, what a dick.
Man.
He's good. Cool.
I don't know who's good on what, but that was interesting to watch.
Yep. Yeah, so if you want to check that out, it's on PC Gamer. Just search for the Elemental Ray player who fucked people up.
This next article I'm excited about.
Yeah.
So if people have not listened to podcasts, you should go back to earlier ones where we talk about PT and we're really excited about it. And then we're really sad that it's not ever going to be made. Now they're making a PC remake, and it's going to be playable for free.
For free.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is being made by some fans, because that's what fans do. So this is a 17-year-old developer who's working on giving everyone a chance to play this cult classic. He's released the first build of the full remake of the game on Windows PC. When he says full remake, there isn't much to remake because there's not much to the game. But well, I'm assuming
there are a lot of hidden gems in there.
Well, yeah, but it's still like, you know, 30-minute experience, yeah, basically. Right. So like, there's just like circles and stuff.
Right. Just keep going around the circle, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so he's working on it. It's out in alpha right now, and it looks very good, and it's also very scary. And then, so if you guys want to play PT again and don't have it on your PlayStation 4 and want to try it out, you can check it out and see what he's done. He also said, which is interesting, he's only had 6 hours of experience with the Unreal Engine prior to making this.
Dang.
And he spent about 140 hours on this. And he has forced himself to learn a lot of things. So he's 17 years old and making a remake of PT. So he's getting his name out there.
Dude, this is sweet.
So good on him.
Yeah, great on this guy. We should have more stuff like this. Yeah. This is as much as I did not like PT, like playing it by myself.
Sorry.
It was really pretty freaky. Yeah. But man, I mean, this just goes to show that Hideo Kojima is a master artist. He can make a small little thing that's just a demo. Obviously, if it would have got made, probably people would have forgot about this. But
right,
people still want to play this. I'm curious to know how many downloads he gets.
I am too. He did a good job with it. It looks pretty. It doesn't have the same kind of visual style. Like it doesn't have, like the, I feel like PT had this kind of a film noise on top of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And this kind of like,
oh, it had that radio playing in the background. There's radio playing in the background.
I know.
Yeah.
But no film noise, like the visual effect, not the audio.
Oh, the film grain.
Yeah, the film grain.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's like had the film, like the the noise over the screen and stuff like that.
Right.
Was that existed, and then they had kind of like a glow to the whole like art style, like on the edges, I guess, or like the glow to the objects and stuff that made it kind of surreal in a way. It was different, but this doesn't have that, but it's still interesting. So
I want to play this with my girlfriend.
Oh my gosh, that's dangerous.
She would hate it.
Dangerous.
So speaking of Unreal,
speaking of remakes and Unreal, Lord of the Rings fans are remaking the Battle for Middle Earth in Unreal Engine 4. So this is called the Battle for Middle Earth Reforged, and it's brand new code that is going to be 4K, the playable build in early 19, and it's multiplayer only. So you will have a campaign in there, but ultimately it's like you can play the EA Battle for Middle Earth game in some form or fashion with multiplayer in Unreal Engine 4 and try it out. Is this something you'd be interested in?
No.
Okay.
I enjoyed the game.
Yeah,
the original game. This just doesn't look appealing. It doesn't look that much. I mean, obviously it looks better, but it doesn't look like amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Travis would be into this. He really liked this game.
Yeah, I never played it, so I'm not sure much about it.
It's
but
gonna be free, isn't it?
I know people love it. Yeah, it's gonna be free.
Cool. When's it coming out?
It's a mod.
Early
Plus, you got the name Battle of Middle Earth in there. You can't charge for it. Otherwise, they try to get sued, and that'd be a bad thing.
That would be bad.
But what you can charge for is a game that is both analog and digital made entirely out of marble.
This is crazy.
This is an article on Kotaku, and there is a artist by the name of Marco Iannicelli, I'm going to say is his name. He's Italian. He made a game called A Maze, and it's literally a game made of solid marble. And it's analog and electric in the fact that it's got a maze on top that's all cut out, and it's a marble that you have to move this board around to get the marble to go around into the center. And you control it though with a little joystick. So you have the digital looking joystick, but it's all a physical maze that's being rotated and moved around. So it's kind of an art piece more than anything, but
yeah,
the fact that it's made out of marble, like you put this in your house and people are like, damn, that's some kind of ancient relic or something. And you're like, no, this is just my game.
This is an ancient relic.
It's just a game that I play
from the early 80s.
Yeah. Right.
It seems cool. There's no price on it, so I assume there's only one of a kind. You probably won't make any more, but
Oh no, it's an art piece. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not okay.
You might sell it at some point. It's just in the art market, but yeah, it's just art. So it's interesting art though. Yeah. So he made it.
Would you buy one, Brett? Would you get one?
It's probably like $20,000, or probably not.
Okay, you're right. Probably like $20,000.
Yeah, it's pretty badass though. I don't like the stand that he put it on, but I like the look of everything else related to it. It's pretty sweet. He's done some weird stuff. He's done a lot of like 3D art installations and things like that. So it's pretty neat. So check that out on Kotaku if you guys are interested in learning about this marble artist piece.
Heck yeah.
Last but not least, Steam made this thing a couple years ago where they made it where Steam Spy no longer worked because they didn't want people to see their...
Steam Spy?
Yeah, Steam Spy. They didn't want people to know their data about usage of the games, like how many people are playing games actively, what are the most popular games, all this stuff. But there's still some code in Steam that somebody managed to break through the API to extract data and learn.
It's every day someone's doing like breaking through.
Yeah.
Doing this shit.
So they broke through and got a list of Steam's 1,000 most played games. And I thought this was interesting because we have the first 10 that we can talk about, but it gives you an idea of like what people are still playing and what people are into. And the full list of the games is on Ars Technica, but the first 10 games are as follows. They're the most popular. Still somehow Team Fortress 2 is at the top. And then you have Counter-Strike Global Offensive, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, a game called Unturned, which I've never heard of.
I have heard of that one.
Left 4 Dead 2, Payday 2, Garry's Mod, Warframe, which I feel like I need to get because everybody plays this game, Counter-Strike Source, and Paladins. So those are the top 10 most played games on Steam as of July 1st, 2018.
I feel like Team Fortress 2 is up there because it's been around longer, and I'm sure a lot more people used to be like the only game to go to.
Yeah.
Minus like Battlefield. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's why it's and up there. Battlefield wouldn't still be in the Steam
tracker either because it's your origin. So
I'm just trying to think like at that time, how many games were out that people could play multiplayer on? Halo, obviously, was around. Some form of Halo.
Yeah. Yeah. Halo Team 2. Fortress was one of a kind for a very long time because it was kind of like the first quote unquote hero shooter, but it wasn't a hero shooter. It was just like a, you know, you have different classes shooter.
Yeah.
But different classes it was shooter. In the mindset of a hero shooter and that you could set up engineer could set up bases. You have like abilities for each one. So, but yeah, the list is interesting. And there's 23,000 games, over 23,000 games on the Steam library right now, which I find to be even more fascinating. That's pretty huge. But
Dota 2 didn't even make the list.
No, Dota 2 is way... I don't even know where... Dota 2 is not even on at the top 10 or whatever. After Paladins, you have Skyrim as the next one, number 11. Then Terraria, Portal 2, Civilization 5, Grand Theft Auto 5, Borderlands 2, RoboCraft, Rocket League, Portal, War Thunder, Rust, Ark, Survival Evolved, Half-Life 2, Brawlhalla is in the top 20.
That's cool.
Chivalry, Medieval Warfare, Trove, Path of Exile, Killing Floor... And then the list just goes on and on and on. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 is on this list. You have Fallout New Vegas is on here. Stardew Valley is on here. Bioshock Infinite, 7 Days to Die. Half-Life 2 Episode 1, Killing Floor 2, Ghost Simulator, of course. Limbo. It's a huge, huge list. So, yeah, if you want to check that out, it's on Ars Technica. And you can see, not only can you see the list itself, you can see the player estimates of each one. So Team Fortress 2 has 50 million players. CSGO is 46 million players and PUBG is 36 million. And then everything kind of drops down below 10 once you get down to like Rocket League.
You don't even have Fortnite on there, so you can't. I wish I could compare all these
Fortnite's
games.
Fortnite's like 20,000 trillion something or another.
Dang, trillion.
I don't even know. Who knows?
More people in the world, huh?
That's basically it, yeah.
So bots playing too, huh?
Yeah, cool. Right. All the bots. Anyway, so that's going to wrap it up for the news we have this week. If there's something that we missed or something that you would like us to talk more about or just something that you think we should talk about in general for next week, you can email us at hello@theinnergamer.net and we will chat about it. Don't forget, if you like what you hear, give us a review and rating on iTunes. We'll be right back with a discussion topic and You don't want to miss it because it's going to be very fun and exciting. So stay tuned.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Today we have special guest Danny Gallagher. You are a writer of many, many things. Many things. So if we could get the cliff notes of what you do, what would that be?
I sit a lot.
Marty a fan.
I don't. I'm not. No. I write for a lot of places. The Dallas Observer is probably my most prolific outlet right now, but I've also written for some video games, for Jackbox Games, for their party packs that are really just kicking ass. Every new one they do, they come out with something that's just, it blows my mind.
Yeah.
And I also have written a new game for a company called Snap Finger Click. They made, do you remember Buzz on PS2?
I do not.
It was a game show, Buzz. Like quiz show type thing.
Okay.
I'm selling it great. Sorry, Martin. No, it was, they make party games. Snap Finger Click makes party games, and they've come out with one called Awkward, which I know you guys have played.
Very awkward.
It is what it says.
Experience the awkwardness.
More for awkward sure. for some than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was something interesting for sure. But we'll talk about that in a little bit.
And I also do comedy around town, sketches. I'm in the Folding Chairs comedy troupe, one of the longest running comedy troupes in DFW. And I write for whoever wants to pay me.
Yeah.
To hear my smart ass comments about things.
So have you is this always what you want to do?
Like working for Jackbox was something I wanted to do since high school.
Yeah.
They were originally called Jellyvision.
Oh, okay.
Yes. What
was that switch like?
Jellyvision. They started as a company called Jellyvision. They're based in Chicago, and they started as, I think they started, and I'm not, and I freelance for them. I'm not full-time, so right. I'm not a official capacity, but from they started in educational software, and they made this educational game show game called That's a Fact, Jack, where kids would like read a book, like A Wrinkle in Time, and then they would go play this game show that would test their knowledge on the book, and the name of the fake, but it would play like the setup would be like you were a contestant preparing to go on a game show. So like when you type in your name, you'd meet with a producer, and the name of the network was called Learn Television. And when they decided to do when they decided to do a video game, which became You Don't Know Jack, the party game, quiz show party game, they used to do something called the Gibberish Question, where it was like they would take a phrase and then rewrite it with like every word that rhymes with it. So Learn Television is a gibberish question for Jelly Vision.
Okay.
So that's right. A long way to explain something that nobody really, I'm sure the company I'll be getting an email. But then Jellyvision and the games division split off because Jellyvision does like interactive software for like different companies. Like they do an interactive, like if you call a phone, like, you know, the voice, it's not that, but they make these like guides for companies to, that are very interactive and very,
right.
You know, sound like you're talking to a person and not a human. When they split off into the games part, they called it Jackbox Games. Jack being named after You Don't Know Jack, which was
when did
the
that
biggest
come
game.
Out? I feel like I remember that.
The 90s. I remember playing it when I was 13 or 14.
So do they have an affiliation with the board game or
what board game?
Well, because there's like, I've seen in the store, like You Don't Know Jack. You can buy like in the board game shelves area, but I wasn't sure.
I don't think that's you mean the standalone, like with the electronic game?
Maybe it is electronic.
Maybe that, there like is an electronic where there is like Tiger made an electronic.
Yeah.
Version.
Okay. So that wasn't the original. That
No. Jack it started Ross as a computer game and then
it took off.
Got
it.
The computer game was a big seller. And so they released different versions. They released like different a sports version. You Don't Know Jack, for those who don't know, it's a trivia game show. But it messes with the player. So it doesn't just ask you, it asks questions that like you have to you have to know two different things. So you have to know like about Shakespeare and Scooby-Doo to get the question right.
Right.
And it's just very interactive. The hosts mess with you. There's a lot of like East, like the funnest part, for the first time I ever played it, you know, you start the game up and it, you know, a producer comes on, his name's Cookie, who's now the host of the Cookie Masterson, hosted by Tom Gottlieb. The first time I played it, I signed in and I took too long. And the game was like, will you hurry up and type a name? and I was like, I'm going to see what's going to, and it's like, all right, fine. I'm going to name it for you. Your name is Flat Tire. And then it types Flat Tire in for you. So it just gives you, if you don't do what it wants to do fast enough, it just does it for you.
Yeah.
That's cool. And it's very clever writing. Like it was, and this was before the internet became like a thing everybody had to have in their house. So they had to look everything up by hand. And
you know, right.
And so it's a comedy game show, which is why I fell in love with it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to just do that, you know, somehow do that for a living. And I kind of, you know, and I have for part of it.
Yeah.
So
how did you get involved with working with the Jackbox team?
It was a completely lucky accident. I was working in McKinney as a newspaper reporter. One of the guys that worked for the company, and I just heard on Kotaku that they were thinking about bringing back You Don't Know Jack. This was the version they released in, I want to say 2006 or 7 for like Xbox 360, PS3.
Gotcha.
Because it had been gone for a long time. Mm-hmm. At one point, like it got so big, like they released several versions. At some point, ABC actually turned it into a game show, which was a disaster because it was nothing like the game. And Paul Rubens hosted it and clearly didn't want to do it.
Why do they always do that? They always,
I know. Yeah. Yeah. They took something great.
Take some magic and just kind of.
Right. The only thing they got right was the Dis or Dat. I don't know if you're familiar with that game. It's where you have to, it's two different things and you have, and like something comes up and you have to identify which it is. But it's always like, is this, are these names the name of a Pope or a Britney Spears song?
Gotcha.
which I love writing. I didn't get to write for that game, but I love writing like those type of
that's things. Funny.
Where was I? Oh, how I get, so I was working at this newspaper in McKinney, and somebody that was working or that still works for them, Arnie Nienkamp, who's the head writer for Jackbox, or one of the head writers. He also does a comedy in Chicago in an improv troupe. Called World News Tonight. They would improvise scenes based on like news events from newspaper clippings. And I interviewed, and they were coming to McKinney, you know, to perform at the local theater. And I interviewed him, and I'm talking to him, and I know of a little, I'm a big comedy nerd, so I know about, you know, we're just talking comedy. Like I think at Doug, I mentioned Doug Stanhope at one point, and he hands the phone to Arnie and goes, hey, be careful. He knows about Doug Stanhope. Like, he knows what he's talking about. And we start talking to Arnie, and he just mentions, oh, and I work for this game company. And I immediately go, you mean Jellyvision? He goes, yeah, you know them? I'm like, yeah, I've wanted to work there all my life. I literally said that to him.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, I asked, are you working on a new You Don't Know Jack? I've read, no, I can't tell you that. You'll find out. And so I just kind of kept in contact with him on Facebook ever since then. Oh, and by the way, his group, World News Tonight, one of the first members was Jordan Klepper from The Daily Show, who now he hosts The Opposition. So, nice. Yeah, I never met him. So, but that's my lame claim to fame, is I worked for a guy that worked for Jordan Klepper. So anyway, so I just kept in contact with him on Facebook, and eventually I got laid off from the newspaper. Which was a blessing in disguise because I was going out of my mind covering. I know it seems like crime in McKinney is not a, is a, it, a no, some weird,
weird
stuff happened in that town. a lot of stuff. It's just like, okay. I'm covering this stuff and it's like, it just, I'm losing my mind anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not helping myself on future job interviews.
That's crazy.
No, it was crime reporting. It's like, I need a break.
Right.
At some point. Sure. So I got laid off and I was freelance writing. I started a second kind of career as a freelance writer for Cracked. Right when Cracked relaunched as the site it is now.
Right.
It kind of blew up into this big thing and I started getting jobs with MTV and Maxim and Spike. I was writing for Spike's website. I was writing humor pieces for them. And,
yeah.
So when I got laid off, I was like, I don't want to find another job. I'm just going to do this. And I think about 6 months into that, I emailed, or I saw Arnie was on Facebook, and I just messaged him like, hey, you know, how you been? If you got a game, you know, coming up, I'd love to work on it. And he was like, oh, you got me right at the right time. We're working on something. And at the time it was Liswater, which is on the first Jackbox Party Pack. They first developed Liswater. Liswater is like a true false game.
Yeah.
But, and I didn't write. I was just a researcher. They had me researching facts or truths. But the truths they were looking for were like, we want stuff that sounds like completely believable, like completely unbelievable. That sounds like stuff we made up. And so it was like, one was like, if you add up all the numbers on a roulette wheel, they add up to 666. Or my favorite one was, I forget the name of the astronaut. I think it was Wally Schirra snuck a pastrami sandwich into space.
Wow.
On one of the Apollo missions.
So these are,
they were sick of the food
that you're finding for the game. Like how do you start into,
I don't
like
sleep
finding the, okay. I'm just going to be,
no, I just come up with a topic. Yeah. So the way the app worked, it was like a Words with Friend game. So you would play a round and then a friend would play the same round and then, you know, and then you'd play three rounds.
Yeah.
And all of them were categorized. You could pick a category. So it was like, categories were like, you know, space or astronauts or toilet paper. So I was trying to think of like weird topics I could do and general topics. My favorite one, which they actually came up with, but they commissioned me to research for, was Chuck Norris facts. But the facts were like, Chuck Norris's favorite candy is peanut clusters. And I literally had to go through books to confirm that Chuck Norris likes to eat peanut clusters.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where did you find that?
I don't remember. It was a long, it took a long time.
Was it a side note?
Yeah. No, it was like you go through newspaper articles and stuff.
Wow.
So they did it as an app and it came out, and then they did a couple of other mobile games, and then they put Liswater on the first party pack, Jackbox Party Pack, which I didn't know about until it came out. Or maybe he told me, I don't remember. But
yeah.
So it just every year I would ask, you know, basically it's me bugging them, hey, can I work on a game?
Yeah.
You know, and if they have a need for writers. Because they have some pretty, I mean, they have a lot of writers, but some of these games, there's so much material, you know, it doesn't hurt to have more people. I mean, I can't speak for them. It's based on a need, but I've, you know, gotten to work on the last, at least one game on the last four party packs. So
now, is that the first game that you've done work on, or was there other ones prior to that that you did some kind of writing,
think,
or research for?
That was the first video game.
Okay, awesome.
Like game you buy in a store.
Yeah,
or on an app. There was another one I worked on that, like, it's not even on there anymore, but I don't remember.
Yeah,
I don't even remember what it was. But yeah, that was the first game title.
So how has that process evolved, like looking back at, you know, researching for Liswater and then going into, like, let's say, like my first foray into the Jackbox games was Jackbox 3.
Okay.
And the first thing I played was Trivia Murder Party.
I
know that you had a big contribution to that.
Oh,
right?
Thank you.
Yeah. And that was like, I was cracking up when we first started playing, and I
showed
it to everybody and they're like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
It's so good.
We all love
it. So
thank you.
Yeah.
A lot of people work on all these games.
All of them, for sure.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Yeah, so, I mean, like, basically, like, how did that process
change
from, like, the beginning to, like,
it was, actually, it was, point? With that one, it was pretty simple. It was, it was, you know, they sent me a proposal or a guideline, whatever you want to call it. Like, here's what we want you to write. And it was basically just write a trivia game.
Okay.
Like they explained what the game was. Like, it's a game show hosted by a serial killer. And if the person gets questions wrong you know, they have to fight for their life. But the material in that was, there was some comedy writing, and then I got to write like some of the lines that the killer the intros saying. Before, Spencer Hamm, who played the host of that, I mean, they gave him like a low jigsaw, you know, type voice.
Oh, yeah.
That's not his real voice.
Right.
Any favorite lines you can think of?
Oh, God, no. I can think of my favorite question and I'm pretty sure I didn't write it, but when it came up in a game, I literally passed out. from laughing. It was, what is the number for edible arrangements?
Oh my gosh.
And it literally just flashed up 4-1-800 numbers. And I just was laughing so hard. I couldn't breathe at one point. And I just kind of slumped back in my chair. It's on camera somewhere. I did it as part of my Extra Life charity marathon.
Nice, nice.
And the camera was right on me. And you can see me just go, like, anyway. No, there was the lines were kind of, there was a lot of, I'm sure there was a lot of rewriting. Because I didn't know, like I didn't write like a line for every question. So to back up, the kind of guidance I was given is we want a mix of like questions that are like morbid, and also like questions about like boy bands and My Little Pony, because you know, like a serial killer threatening to kill someone and is like, who's the only female Smurf? It's hilarious. So like happy stuff, like to kind of juxtapose it, and then there were just some. I came up with some. Actually, there is a favorite of mine. I got to think of what it was. I'm going to give the answer, but I don't care. I kind of, after a while, you get not bored, but you just, it becomes a routine. So you're like, how do I make this interesting for me?
Right, right.
And I started to put hidden messages in the answer. So there's one question. The book, there's a book by E.E. Cummings called Gadsby. And the question was, what letter does E.E. Cummings never use in the book Gadsby? There's a letter he doesn't use in the book at all. And the four choices were U-D-I-E.
You die.
Yeah. So I would start writing questions that could let me put little secret messages in. So one was like, what are the first five letters that they give you on Wheel of Fortune in the bonus round? And I somehow... And I didn't put R-S-T-L-N-E. I rearranged the letters so that it would read rest in your plots in the four answers. Like, it started getting, like, obsessive. Like, how can I sneak something in? And then it just was fun because I got to, like, look at morbid, you know, look at horror novel stuff and morbid trivia and, you know, things I'm kind of, you know, serial killer trivia.
Did you add in any of the Pokemon stuff?
No, I don't know anything about. There was a Pokemon. I probably did.
There's a few.
Yeah, there was I think it was about the time when I was writing Pokemon Go had taken off, and I never cared about it.
Yeah, kind of all of our friends. When that Pokemon question comes up at the end, when you have to like race to the finish.
At the very end. Yeah. I didn't work on the bonus. Or they may have taken some that I'd written and reworked them into that, because I didn't know how the game was going to end. I was like, well, what if? Is it just? Like, I didn't know how the end part would work. I just knew how the main game was going to work.
Gotcha.
So they may have taken, like, questions. Because there were a couple of questions I wrote. Like, which of these... I tried to, like... I love the this or that. And you don't know Jack, so I tried to, like, make my own. So I was like, which of these is a country song or a direction in a chainsaw instruction album or something? Like, I tried to, like, do that. And none of those really worked. But they might have put some in that... I don't know for sure because I don't know.
I got you.
Once the material's done and the contract's up, it's like, okay, now I just wait for the game.
Yeah.
See what makes it, see what doesn't.
Right. So when are you, like, what's the timeline between, like, you finish the work that you turn off to them and, like, the game actually comes out? Because I'm sure there's, like, an NDA and stuff like that where you can't say anything about the game.
Yeah, it depends on the game. So. It depends on the game and how far along they are. So, like... like it could be anywhere from 2 to 3 months to a year.
Okay.
It just depends on how much they've done, how much work they have to do. You know, I mean, I don't know all the processes entailed I'm done writing it and all the coding and the recording.
Yeah.
I mean, they work an insane amount of hours. I've heard Arnie say, you know, he works a lot on these because it's a lot of writing. It's a lot of writing and reading and researching, and then. Once the writing's down, then there's recording because they don't want to just, they don't like to just put the text up on the screen. They like to have a host read it or say something. Yeah, right. So it sounds like someone's playing with you.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
In the game.
It's crazy.
But, yeah.
So you also, you worked on Bracketeering with Jackbox 4.
That was a short one.
That was a short one?
Yeah.
Okay.
About a month.
Okay. That's pretty
interesting. Because they had four or five writers, I think.
Yeah. Gotcha. So you just contributed... You know, more questions.
I just wrote prompts. Like that was probably the easiest and the funniest one.
Yeah.
Because it's about what, you know, think of prompts that would start arguments. And I'm like, I'm good at that.
Yeah.
I start arguments all the time.
Do you have a favorite that you
wrote for that? No. There's, So y'all know how the game
works.
Yeah,
we just played a couple nights.
Okay. Oh, so my favorite one. Yeah. So for the second and the third rounds, you don't know what the category is going to be, or you don't know what the debate is going to be. Yeah. You know what the category is. So I came up with one that was just write any two words and put and or ampersand between them. And I mean, I came up with 30, or not 30, but I came up with a lot of ones that worked. Like write any two words with and put and between them. And one was like, best name for a 70s cop show, best names for an acoustic guitar rock duo, you know, best name for a vaudeville team. And I every time I play that game, I pray for that one to come up because it just gets the biggest laughs. It came up once during a Christmas party, and the cop show one just killed. I think once I wrote like Stinky and Shakes for a best 70s cop show.
That's pretty good. Pretty good.
I'm trying to think of another one that was good. And Name Any Animal was fun because it's
That's the one we just had actually because we got that and then we didn't see where it was going to take us down the path to. And crazy. It
went from like best thing to spray paint on your van to scariest prison roommate nickname.
Yeah. It was
one was like scary. Ocelot.
Nice.
There's a lot of bracketeering was a lot of fun. And it was really sports oriented, which I liked. I didn't get to write my favorite part of the game. Phil Ryder Ollie, who does the voice of the host for that, is also the voice of Schmitty from the. He's the voice of Schmitty from You Don't Know Jack, and he's also, if you call the Apple tech support line, he's the first voice you hear.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah. Oh wow. And I know him. I don't know him personally, but I talk to him every now and then, and I can't tell you how many times I've like I was yelling at you this morning so hard, and I felt bad because I know who you are.
That's hilarious.
I'm trying to think of. The topic is name any vegetable, and the topic is best character or name any vegetable, and the topic is best vegetable for Benedict Cumberbatch to voice in a movie. Oh, and like every other win is like you just got Cumberbatched. He's so funny, and the writing is so funny.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Now we gotta play more.
It's like one of those games like you want to play it and keep finding out what the different things, because I don't know how they do it, but they're very good at like not repeating. Mm-hmm. Like I don't, you'd have to ask them, but the tech, there's got to be something in the tech where they like, they know, the game knows, oh, okay, we've already done this category. Don't do that for a while. You know, use this one.
Right. It's kind of like with Cartoons Humanity. Like, well, that's, when we first got into that, we were loving it. And after a while, you know, you start seeing repeat cards and everything.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, I'm just getting, this is getting old now. We've already had the same jokes over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, with writing like these questions and these different things like that, you have to have probably a pretty large understanding of just pop culture stuff in general and like just history. Like, I mean, there's like so much that you probably have to be able to pull from. So like how much of that is related to like how much research goes into this? And also how much is just like, how do you, like, what have you done over the years to kind of like be able to like
not date,
you know, write all this out? Are you going to sit down and write all day?
No, I mean, my pop culture knowledge, I mean, I know stuff I like, but stuff I don't like, I don't pay it. So like My Little Pony, I only know about, you know, through, I guess, osmosis, I guess, from like my niece or like stuff I watch with my niece or something I've written about, you know. Well, for like Trivia Murder Party, we had to verify, you know, that things were factually
right.
Or Trivia Murder Party and Lieswater. So it was just and that one with Trivia Murder Party was basically just like go find happy stuff. So that's not my wheelhouse. I'm not happy. No, it was just like, oh, I think a My Little Pony question would be funny. So I go research something on My Little Pony or Pez or what's another one? I say the problem is it's like I've written like 800 questions for that game alone, so
right.
I remember two of them. That's why I was like, I wish I brought my files, I could reference them. And also because I don't know which ones make it into the game.
Right.
And which, yeah. I mean, like when I play it, I'm like, oh, I remember I wrote that one. But yeah. You don't know what goes in. I do remember one. The most obscure one from Trivia Murder Party was there's some kind of, there's a, you know, Lean Cuisines, the frozen dinners. There's some kind of like, I don't know what it's called, but I think it's like gourmet select. And the question was, which of these is not a gourmet select Lean Cuisine dish? And I literally went on the Lean Cuisine website and double confirmed, okay, you know, fettuccine Alfredo with florette broccoli is not a, or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
It's mainly just like, it's mainly like...
You know it or you don't.
You know it or you don't. Well, no. In terms of like what you're talking about, like inspiration,
yeah.
It's mainly just like, okay, I have guidelines for what they want. You know, and then I just write whatever comes to me. And then when that runs out, I just randomly pick a topic in my head.
Yeah.
And then just go try to find something on that, whether it's like a trivia game or like a prompt game or a game where it's like a comedy game like Bracketeering or Quiplash. It's just like, oh, what am I? Seashells. Okay. I'll go look up something on seashells and see what I can find randomly.
Crazy facts are out there. Yeah. About that.
And I have books. Yeah. I also have books that I use. Reference books, the Dictionary of Cultural Literacy, which is like whole chapters on like
that's interesting.
Music yeah. and literature and physics and, you know, and then they do make pop culture encyclopedias. I don't know how they get made because these people must live very dull and tired lives. Like I have a book that thick on get pop culture encyclopedia.
Put together, yeah.
I mean, it takes a lot of work, but it's like a lot of like knowledge that I'm like, how do you categorize it? So
if you can memorize that, you'd probably be a master at every drinking trivia game.
Well, yeah, and I was gonna say, and Jeopardy. I watched Jeopardy a lot. No, Jeopardy is perfect for it because it's like,
yeah, questions are intense.
The questions are intense, and the every game is pretty broad. So like in one round, it's like it covers movies and geography and this. So I'll just I won't steal from that, but I'll use it as like, oh, okay, geography. Oh, I'll go look up something on lakes and then find something. You know, or use that as whatever. So I'll have something on in the background.
Yeah.
Or I'll have a movie on. What I really like to do is just have a movie on like my iPad, and then someone will say a word and I'll just go with that.
Yeah.
So I could be watching Scarface, and when he says ice cream, I'm like, oh, okay, all right, ice cream. That's my word for whatever it is.
There you go.
That's if I'm really desperate.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, after a month, it's like, okay, I got to keep the well somewhat full of something. Yeah, so.
Right. Let's jump into Awkward is the game from Snapfinger Click
yeah.
that just recently came out on the Switch on July 5th, I think it was. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. So
it's out now.
We picked it up, played
it's
it.
It's on Switch and Xbox and PS4 and Steam for PC and Mac.
Yeah. So in this one, you would work with another writer, and you two were the sole writers for it, right?
As far as I know,
yeah.
Joanna has... damn it. Sorry. I want to make sure I say her name right. Joanna Haslam. That's
yes.
right. Okay.
Yeah.
I almost said Hasham. I'd remember that.
So
no, Joanna Haslam, who's a huge help with like the direction of the game.
Yeah. It's such a different game. Like I was kind of in my mind, I was thinking I was jumping into another Jackbox kind of game, but it's definitely
Not me
that
too.
Way.
When I started,
it's very different. So, It's meant to be played with, I guess it's more around like partner groupings and stuff like that, and trying to figure it out. One thing I was confused, I want to ask you, since you know, you worked on the game.
Okay.
Is it meant to be like you have like somebody has a controller and you just pass a controller around? Is that the idea?
I wasn't I don't remember if we were going to use phones. I think I remember Martin saying when they tested it, they felt like the controller was the easiest part.
Yeah.
Because it's just two people answering the same question.
Same. Yeah.
So it's just one controller.
Yeah,
it's
passive. Yeah. Right. So we were confused at that first because we were playing four people.
At some point, I think they didn't want to do like the phone
afterwards.
Thing where you go on a website and sign in
and all that.
You know, but they figured
one of our friends was like, "Why didn't you just have a website where you signed in?"
Well, it's not Jack. Because it's just two people. Well, no, I mean, it makes sense logistically. Like, if it's just two people, then everyone's just sitting around with a phone that they're not using.
Right. Yeah.
And it's simpler that way to just have two people go head to head as opposed to like everybody. I mean, maybe, you know, if they did a sequel, like maybe they would. I don't know for sure if they would do that.
Yeah.
But
so
it's simpler. I guess.
In the game, it starts off. I like how it kind of led into, like, you start with round one and it's just more general. Get to know each other.
It was
kind
level
of questions, and then as you get to level three, it's like,
who's more racist?
Holy shit! Yeah, exactly. I was like, dang, these are intense.
Yeah.
So, how did that process for researching for that and writing these questions shift from like what you've done for Jackbox to this?
It was kind of the same muscle.
Is it?
I mean, not as much research because it was more creative writing.
Right.
And research, although, you know, I'm sure there were times when I was like, oh, I should, like, who's more, like, which Pokemon is this person or something, like something I didn't know, you know, might have been in that. But it was more like, it was based on, like, the level. So it was like, first round is, like, innocuous, like, you know, do you like pineapple on pizza? Second round is a little bit more awkward, like, you know, again, I can't think of a single one. There's literally like 5,000 questions. It was months of writing on this one. It was about 3 months of writing.
Yeah.
I could think of a second one.
I think we had the Pokemon question when we played.
That was Trivia Murder Party.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Unless you're talking about. Again, I don't remember if there was a Pokemon. I'm sure there was.
Yeah,
we didn't get one.
Or it was like, or one was like, who's probably a Brony? Would be the second one because they were also
nice.
I don't know if this came out in the game because I haven't played it with other people. I've just played the single player version.
Yeah,
because I don't have many friends. I'm kidding. You were oddly silent, like. I'm just gonna move past it. Some questions were like, okay, this is for a married couple, or this is for like a parent, or this is for friends, and some were tailored to women and some were tailored to men,
right?
I think you make those choices. And when you're setting up the game,
right. No, I like that about it.
Yeah, like it's very intuitive in that, like, they tried to tailor some, because some questions you couldn't ask. Like, you can ask a married... Well, I mean, it would be awkward, but not in the way we want.
Right.
Like, you could ask a married question. There's nothing that says you can't ask the same question to a married couple that you could to a pair of friends, but they work better if that way. Or like, well, I remember. So, and then the top level, I don't remember if it's three or four rounds.
It was three.
I think it was three.
Yeah.
The top level is always the most awkward. So one is like, who has, for a married couple would be, who has more skeletons in your closet? You or your lover? Right. Who's more likely to cheat on someone, your mom or your dad?
Yeah,
we had that question.
Did you have that?
Yeah,
okay,
was,
good.
That was a interesting one.
Right.
We were like, I don't know either of their parents. I don't know how to answer that.
And there were moments too when I kind of exhausted my imagination and I tried to get creative with it, but I can't remember.
Yeah.
I think maybe like one was like, you know, one was like, which little My Little Pony are you, Twinkle Bright or Pinkie Pie or whatever, like something like just
what
I
was the
like,
one that was like the question between, it was either the Wookiee or another thing.
Oh yeah,
it's like, who would you rather be or something like that. It was
right,
like Wookiee or something.
It was like an animal or something.
Yeah, it was some other weird name. But when somebody answered a non-Wookiee, I was like, why would you want to be the Wookiee or something like that? It was really funny.
It's meant to be an argument starting game.
Oh yeah.
I didn't know if our friend, it was a guy from the community, like, was into Star Wars or not, because we never talked about it. I just assumed that he wasn't because he never really spoke about it. Because everyone else I know plays Star Wars, so I was like, oh yeah, I love Star Wars. Star Wars.
I tried to do stuff with some duality. So it was like, I think one I wrote was, would you rather save a 1-year-old child or a 60-year-old man?
Oh gosh.
Yeah. Like questions where it's like there's no good outcome to whatever you answer, but the duality makes it fun. It's like a would you rather type scenario. But I tried to go beyond that, like make it a little more original than just either or, like try to draw it up, but I can't think of one.
Right. I think there was one on, because it was, we were doing the friends component, and there was one about if you knew that your friend, I think, cheated on somebody, would you tell?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Somebody,
no, it was
something related to cheating on a friend.
Lying is worse, or what's worse, lying or something about lying and then not saying something? Keeping your mouth shut is equivalent to lying.
Sounds like familiar. That.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of.
It was a mix of like moral dilemmas and then just completely crazy.
Yeah,
you know who's more racist? kind of thing. Like literally, the game asks, "Who is more racist?" Like
Brett,
me or you? You know, me or whoever.
Right. Yep. It was definitely awkward. It was an interesting thing. We're thinking about because you know we have these social events that we do.
Yeah.
And I think we might introduce that. We're definitely gonna have Jackbox there for people to try and jump into. So it's always
and awkward
fun and awkward. Yes. yes. They're both gonna be there.
Cool.
So it'll be a good time, I think, because it's very interesting. So you know, outside of like. I guess my next question would be, where do you see yourself like going from here? Because you've worked on these games.
Yeah, I don't know.
You do the freelance writing. do you want to keep in the realm of video game writing?
Definitely. There's a couple of jobs I'm trying to get that I really want that are in. I kind of feel like this could be like it's a new comedy arena as like interactive. You know, not like just playing a game for the sake of playing a game, but like a game where like, you know, like I have ideas for games that I could develop that are based, you know, that have a comedy element to them. Yeah. The problem is now, you know, Cards Against Humanity was a huge hit and they've been copied so much. Like, there's like a million games where it's like, okay, you play this card, and then someone picks their favorite and that's their point. And there are some that are, I worked on one like that, but found a cool twist to it called Utter Nonsense, which is a card game where you deal out cards and then they have statements on them. And then you pick a voice card and everyone has to play one card and read it in that voice. So it could be like the card could be redneck and you have to read this ridiculous statement like I breathe detergent for fun. I worked on the family friendly version, the
family edition.
Yes. I worked on the family edition. So we had to be clean but goofy, and one was like one of the card. One I know that I made it in was the first rule of Pancake Club is you do not talk about Pancake Club. Like just like random, very silly stuff. I think I made about 50 that made it in the game.
Yeah.
Because I got paid by the card they picked up.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
$17.99.
There you go. Get it now.
Audio Jump edition. On it. Oh, man.
Yeah. Both of them are fun. I've played it. And the voices are like redneck. Southern Riverboat Gambler is my favorite because I think I do a pretty good one.
Let's hear it.
I need a card.
Oh gosh, yeah.
I'll find you one.
I don't even know how I'd start with that. Like,
well, you base it on a voice you hear. So
yeah,
I try to do. I'm. You got one? What am I doing?
Pick your poison.
Oh, okay. No, it's too racist. Even my imaginary friends are getting married before me.
Nice.
That wasn't. I should have gone with the racist one. It's better for a Southern Riverboat Gambler.
Give me
that one. I'll do that one.
Go for it. Yet, so.
The hardest part about being in an interracial relationship is selecting the Instagram filter.
Oh man, I should have got
my
this.
First instincts were better. I was like, it's a family show. No, it's not. That was the other one.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I have a question about somebody who, like, say you have, there's people that are listening that are wanting to get in writing or anything like that. You've been doing it. How long have you been a professional writer?
18 years.
What
I'd rather not think about it.
What advice would you give somebody, or like lessons that you've learned that's like, if they're getting started, like what is something that you would say, like, don't do this, or here's something that I wish I had known when I got into the business?
No, I mean, the honest is just to write.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, is just, you know, start a Tumblr, like come up with an idea for something you'd want to write regularly and just whatever it is. You know, if you want to write a book, then try to write a book. If you want to write jokes and find a place to go do stand up. You know, if you want to write for video games, you know, call up companies and say, hey, you know, I mean, it is about like who you know if you want to get paid.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is luck. Like in the Jackbox case, that was my luck because I, you know, ran into the guy at the right time and then called him back. And then, you know, if you want to write, just write. That's really, that's just the best way to, and now's the best time ever. I don't like that writers, that there's some websites that are like, you know, oh, you know, we'll give you exposure. You know, we won't pay you because they can't afford it. And I'm like, no, don't do, you know, if you have to, like, I mean, if it's an avenue, fine. But it seems that's becoming more and more of a industry practice. Like some big places. Like, I mean, the Huffington Post, that's how they built their empire, was by.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Free writing. Give you a name or help build your name or something.
Right. And again, if it's like getting clips, that's fine. But if it's like, if you're writing to write, like, you know, like if you're offering like a paid writer, like volunteer, like exposure, I'm like, that doesn't help me, you know.
Right.
What helps me is making money and, you know, having something that was like, here, I got paid to write for this place or paid to publish this.
Anyway, well, I think we've kind of covered the gamut here. We've gone through writing and everything and all of that. Now the question is, where can we find you online? Like, what are some places? And is there any particular things
I've
you want to
give you my
push?
Facebook page now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm at Facebook. What is it? Writer Danny Gallagher at Facebook. On Twitter at This Is Danny G. Instagram at writer Danny Gallagher. Like I said, I write for the Dallas Observer.
Yeah.
Mostly. Folding Chairs, we have a show sometime in September at Pocket Sandwich Theater. Hopefully we're working on it, but I'm trying to get October for Mocky Horror Picture Show. What else? That's all. Oh, Just a Sec. My podcast is Just a Sec, the Geekly World News podcast that we do for Dallas On Air.
Yeah.
Which we do episodes every other week, but they're all archived on dallasonair.com.
That's cool.
We broadcast Sundays at 10:30.
Right, and you guys do a live broadcast with that,
We do a live broadcast, and then they archive them at Dallas On Air. And we've started putting them on Facebook Live. We're about to get on. We just passed our one-year anniversary.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you. So awesome. we're trying to get on iTunes. You know, we got to do the iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean stuff. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah. So you use Podbean for the hosting and stuff like that?
Yes. Yep. Right now, I only use it for a podcast that helps me sleep.
Yeah. There you go.
The Sounds of Rain podcast. I highly recommend.
Awesome. Well, there you
it's
go,
an
everybody.
Odd plug.
check out Danny online. Definitely check out the new Awkward game that just came out. It's very, very cool and very, very awkward. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, man. I had a great time. Thanks.
Yeah. So that's going to conclude everything this week. If there's something you want to hear us talk about, please let us know at hellothenergamer.net. You can also donate to us on Patreon at patreon.com/thenergamer. To get all of these videos early, or you can go to youtube.com/innergamer and get the clips every Thursday. So thank you all for watching and or listening, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. We have two games coming out both on, are you ready for this? July the 13th, Friday the 13th. Creepy! We have Earthfall. Earthfall is coming on PC. It's a cooperative shooter for up to four players using team-based tactics to fortify holdouts and complete objectives. Players must work together to survive. And we have an interview with this guy, right? Right? Yeah, this is Earthfall we have interviewed.
Yes.
Yes.
We interviewed him last year at PAX South. We had a great interview with him. Actually, owner of the studio, Hollow Spark.
That's
studios.
What it is. Game Go to youtube.com/innergamer. Check out the Inner Gamer Invades playlist, and you can see our interview with him from PAX South.
We got to play
2017.
We got to play it there, and it is completely different than what it is when we played it.
It's like Left 4 Dead, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Left 4 Dead with aliens. Gotcha. So there's actually a story there too. So I'm curious to see how that is. I'm hoping they actually have a campaign, but I know you can go online and play co-op with friends. So that's what's like interesting.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. We're going to do that. In addition, on that day, it's going to be a tough day for video gamers because you also have the release of Octopath Traveler on the Switch. In Octopath Traveler, as we talked about in the past, you step into the shoes and lives of 8 travelers, and you freely explore the world of Orstera, brought to life by Square Enix. Use each character's special abilities in and out of battle, break through enemy defenses by discovering and targeting weaknesses, store boost points with each turn, and then spend them at strategic times to strengthen abilities, chain attacks, or provide aid. Choose the path you wish to walk and discover what lies beyond the horizon. So, Friday the 13th, you can choose between getting scared, believing in scary things, or playing Earthfall or Octopath Traveler. The choice is yours.
I'm totally going to play that. I got to play both these games. This is awful. This
gonna
is
be a tough weekend.
Awful. I might not even be home to play them.
Oh, that sucks. That's right.
I think it might be in Austin.
Well, I'm going to be playing all of them.
I know.
That's going to wrap up our show this week. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite game podcast. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend.
And we also have a Patreon set up, which is a way for you, our listeners, to donate to the cause in order to bring you all the great content you want to see and hear. Even $1 a month, that's $12 a year, will help us keep this content coming to you every week. Plus, if you support us, we have some great, awesome rewards waiting for you, such as being a guest on the podcast, getting exclusive content, or potentially winning a video game every quarter. So head on over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. I'm Austin Morales.
I'm Brayden Oski.
Guys, thank you so much for tuning in this week. We'll catch you next week with more video game news, opinions, discussions, shenanigans, other thingigans, breadigans,
and video games.
Those two.
Shoot me. That's great bonus content right there.